Okay. Well, before we get started, I would like to first announce that this teleseminar is Brain Boosting, How to Tune Up Your Most Important Tool. And as we're getting started, I'd like to find out if there's any particular questions or concerns that anyone has. Any thoughts you have, anything that's bothering you with the way your mind is working lately. I don't want to put anybody on the spot here, of course, but but you know, if something has been occurring to you, and you know, I think that for some people there's always the issue of why is it I forget people's names when I'm in an event where there's a lot of people around and I'm feeling a bit uncomfortable, and then make myself more uncomfortable by forgetting my best friend's name, for example, or other things like that. And it's very interesting how this information tells us why that happens. It's very intriguing that it's important. Hang on just a minute. I can't do that. Okay. I'm sorry. I've got some people here who are listening to the teleseminar, and they're putting questions out to me, and I can't read and talk at the same time. At least, anyway, that's within my normal capacity, not to read and talk at the same time. But any thoughts, anything that has happened to you, anything that you've observed with yourself that is maybe distressing or that you've seen has happened in times when you're not maybe feeling well? Because certainly our memories and our brains are affected by stress and by illness. There is no doubt about it. Nothing? No one has a thought about that?
Well, this is Teresa. I mean, my challenge has been several years back. I sort of had like a breakdown, and I was supposed to diagnose with depression or whatever, but I don't take any medication. So I just know, I don't know if it's something that I'll have to do the rest of my life. I have to manage my just what I eat and everything, because I know it's directly affected, like my moods and everything. So I try to manage it with food and nutrition supplements and everything, but it's a challenge because I can just tell when I'm having something come on, so I have to really kind of go back to my routine.
Right. And have you noticed that there are certain foods that get your brain out of kilter?
Yeah. I mean, my body needs a lot more protein. I need like a lot more B vitamins, I think.
Protein and vitamins. It definitely affects the way your brain functions.
And I can tell a big difference when the sun isn't out. You know, I need sun.
Yes, and that seasonal affect disorder, whether it's the sunshine. Yes, and having 7 days of rain is never good for anybody, I don't think. I couldn't live in Seattle anyway, I know that for sure. But I think those things do affect us. But it's interesting that you're very aware of what you're eating, and I think that for many people, for example, sugar can get them way out of kilter.
Oh, yeah.
Can cause the brain to not function normally, and it certainly lowers resilience and lowers immunity function. But that is as a background. I'm going to keep that in mind as I speak today. And anybody else, and honestly, you don't need to say your name if you don't want to. You can just say, "Hey, this is the issue I'm having." So, but this is, I think, very good for other people to hear as well, because there's a lot of people who are facing issues. And the interesting thing about this topic is that today more people younger than ever before are having issues with their brains and their memories, and there is a very good reason for all of that. So here's what I'd like you to do so that you can be comfortable and you can move around and eat and do whatever you want, is if you would press *6, that will mute you, and then before we're done, when I'm finished, I'm going to have you to unmute for any comments or questions or discussion. So go ahead and hit *6, and sometimes, it is rare, but sometimes pressing *6 doesn't get you back into the conference, and if that's the case, then you have to redial. I know that that's the case, that can happen, because I was a guest a guest expert one time on a teleseminar, and I had pressed star 6 to mute, and discovered when it was my turn to speak, I couldn't be heard. So I had to dial back in again, and we've had that happen. Don't worry about it. It'll get you right back in just 2 minutes. You can ask me to repeat what I've said. So
I just wanted to mention, Lee.
Sure.
Leah, I just wanted to mention that my problem is that my mind never stops.
Okay. It's
never slows down.
Yeah.
All the time. At night, I go to bed and I think about everything that happened all day long, or I think about everything that's going to happen in the future, and the event I have to plan or be organized for. So I never get that restful, any sort of a restful sleep.
And that is something that we're going to talk about too, because part of that is you gaining control over a runaway brain. And in some of the Eastern thought, they call that having monkey brain. And they say, imagine a group of monkeys running all around and climbing over each other. You say, that's exactly what it feels like.
Yeah.
And so that is a technique, and that is something that I'm going to be talking about a little bit and actually talking about more in a later seminar, that is on getting your mind to slow down and relax and focus. And that is something, it takes skill, and it's developed skill. It takes practice. And then you eventually gain control over it because you are the boss. Nobody but you is there making it run around. And that's, you know, the biggest question is, who is in charge of your brain, if not you?
Okay. I'm going to go on mute now.
Okay. Well, I am delighted to be talking about this topic because I think it is so extremely important. And I meant to include this in your handout, but just as we're getting started, so that I do not forget, and believe me, I have to work with my memory too, I would like you to write somewhere on this handout or on the page you're writing on the name Richard, last name Restak, R-E-S-T-A-K, M-D. And his last name again is R-E-S-T-A-K, M-D. He is one of the most prolific writers on brain function. He has, for a large part of his career, worked out of George Washington University. He is the man whose quote I use when I go speak to lawyers when I am doing continuing legal education for attorneys. It is the piece that I want to make sure that they hear. Richard Restak has done studies, numerous studies for many, many years on how stress plays a role in our brain functioning. And he's the one who made the comment that was very loud and clear. He said, unrelenting stress causes brain damage. And there is no equivocation here, because what we know very, very clearly is that when we become stressed, we emit adrenaline and cortisol. And it is cortisol, spelled C-O-R-T-I-S-O-L, cortisol, racing through our bloodstream, also races through our brain. And what we now know is that cortisol actually kills brain cells. It actually destroys brain cells. And so now, as I was following up from what I started saying earlier, now we have people in their late 30s and early 40s even saying, doctor, what's wrong with me? Do I have early Alzheimer's? And there is a rush of people to doctors today saying, what in the world is wrong with me? I can't remember things. I used to have a steel trap memory. I used to just thrive on adrenaline. I love adrenaline. It just keeps me moving. I'm constantly pushing myself, and I love it. And now they're hearing from doctors, and that is the reason why your brain is burning out. And so here are ways that you can help your brain. Oh, here's another name I'd like you to write down, and this is a bit more complicated. First name, Dharma, D-H-A-R-M-A. middle name, S-I-N-G-H, and last name, K-H-A-L-S-A-M-D. Dharma Singh Khalsa, M.D., is one of the best-known brain researchers we have, and he is a man whose name wasn't originally Dharma Singh Khalsa, but he has taught and was schooled at both Princeton and Yale. He has written a book that I believe everybody should read, especially as they, if they're involved in businesses that are constantly causing stress, or if people are under a lot of stress, even with children at home. The book is called Brain Longevity. Brain Longevity by Dharma Singh Khalsa. He is now the president of the Alzheimer's Foundation. And what he is saying is that we ourselves cause more the likelihood of Alzheimer's to happen, and that we're seeing this in much and much younger people, so much so that we all have to find a way to deal with it so much better, and there are ways to deal with it. But just having those two names, I believe, will lead you to books that are absolutely phenomenal for you to read. Dr. Richard Restack has written 20 books, and he one of his books is called Mozart's Brain and the Fighter Pilot. And it's a really interesting book also that will outline a lot of different methods you can take to strengthen your brain. But as we're starting today, I want to talk about a couple of things that I think are very important because we are, I think we take our brains for granted. So I want to walk through 10 exceptionally interesting facts about the brain. And here's what I also want to tell you, that you don't need to race your pen in writing these down, because by the end of the day today, these will be on the new website, successstar.org, under the button that says Brain Boosting. And that is located on the left-hand side. The website isn't completely completed, but it is really coming along, and I want to put these facts there so that you can access them, because I think they are really, really a powerful thing for us to know. Because we, I think, don't really truly understand, and neither does science understand how our brains work, especially since we have designated two sides of the brains and clearly delineated which one does which thing. And then when someone has cancer on the side of the brain, for example, where language resides, and that side of the brain might be completely removed, there are people that still can learn to speak again, as if the brain regrows itself. But even if there's nothing on the left-hand side, for example, there are marvels that happen within the brain, despite the fact that they have outlined and patterned where they think speech resides, where they think languages reside, where they think spatial ability resides, all of these things, but we still don't know everything about the brain. But here's the first, and I'm going to do a countdown of 10, 9, 8, 7. Here's the first one. We have a storage capacity in the terabytes. That's how much we have of the ability that our brains have for capacity. That when we have a computer and we know what a gigabyte is, and remember when a gigabyte used to be just enormous, when everybody was laughing, oh my gosh, it's a 1 gigabyte computer, who would ever need that? Well, a terabyte is a little over 1,000 gigabytes. A terabyte is over 1,000 gigabytes of storage capacity in the brain. And really what they believe is if you say 1 terabyte is a little over 1,000 gigabytes when you're thinking about a computer, now process this, that we have between, and so here's the why we just don't have enough information. Scientists don't know where, how many terabytes of storage we have in our brains, because it has been estimated to be between 3 terabytes and 1,000 terabytes. That's a pretty big range, depending on the individual. And then to consider that Britain's National Archives, which store 900 years of information for an entire country, takes up only around 70 terabytes. That means that you are probably capable of storing that entire body of information in your brain with plenty of room to spare. It's also been said that we could hold 5 times the amount of information as the Encyclopedia Britannica or any other encyclopedia out there, but that still doesn't give you enough information because basically, bottom line is, most people are using only between 6 and 10% capacity of their brain. So if you thought there might be a way to open up the rest of your brain, what an awesome, awesome thought. Now, next one, number 9. Your brain operates on current. And just like a computer, there's electrical impulses in our brains. It uses electrical power. And it's probably comparable to about a 10-watt light bulb. And what they're actually saying is that when we do things, specific brain exercises, or learning a language, or learning to play the piano, we actually light up parts of our brain. And so it's what we need to remember is, since the brain is so like electricity lighting up, you know, you see these jellyfish in the ocean that light up at night, and you think our brains actually light up. That can explain why scientists are so very concerned about people holding cell phones up to their heads for any period of time, because it can interfere with the activity in the brain. And I hate to say this, but I'm sure you're pretty aware that two of the very first people that ever died of a brain tumor, but two people that recently died of a brain tumor, and this was about 5 years ago, were two of the people that were one of the first users of cell phones. And they were CEOs of large companies that were able to afford the cell phones. Of course, it was an earlier technology, and it was a bigger phone, and they were using it probably a lot more than most people did with those gigantic cell phones. But they also got brain tumors, and they didn't make it. So something to consider. And what is being said is that having an earpiece is far better. Having a Bluetooth is far better, something to keep it away from your head. Just like you also don't want to put your head under one of those old-fashioned hair dryers, they're saying, is also a very bad idea. How women used to sit under those hair dryers in beauty salons. So they're saying, don't do that. That's not good. Get your handheld hair dryer and do it fast and let it air dry the rest of the way. The next one, number 8, nerve impulses travel at the speed of light almost in your brain. In fact, what they've clocked it at around 170 miles per hour, but that is probably an inaccuracy. They think it is actually much faster than that, because when you're at a party and you start to feel mildly uncomfortable and you get somewhat tense, and then you can't remember a word or a person's name, that is because your brain has mucked up the neurotransmitters between cells in a very quick split second. Let's say that you get tense right after meeting someone or right as you're shaking hands with this person and you feel intimidated, that's at the very moment when you can get tongue-tied. You can't remember the word, you can't remember a name. It happens what seems to be instantaneously. So just remember that your brain is constantly processing information. It's going miles, miles a second, a nanosecond. And next, number 7 as we count down, your brain uses 20% of the oxygen you breathe. It only uses up about 2% of the body mass, but it needs about 20% of the oxygen we breathe in order to keep functioning. It's because of this fact that we die so easily when we're deprived of oxygen. Without the brain functioning, all of the messages that race around our bodies all day long do not get delivered, do not get sent, and they don't reach their destination, which means that organs and cells of the body will shut down very soon after we've been deprived of oxygen, even if it's only for a few minutes, because the brain is pretty much the orchestrator. So again, that's like the parallel with the computer. If your computer, if your laptop runs out of battery power, it goes into standby mode, just like when the brain first enters a comatose state. Then if the oxygen remains scarce, it just shuts down, and that's when we're brain dead. So we obviously need a lot of oxygen, and so when people are sedentary, they don't get a lot of oxygen, especially if they need to be boosting their levels of oxygen. Number 6, higher IQ equals more dreams. Now, this is an interesting one. It's a proven fact that the higher your IQ, the more you dream. Scientists studying the phenomenon of dreams have discovered that while everyone dreams, everyone does dream, the frequency of dreams is notably higher in those of above average intelligence. And if you haven't been remembering your dreams lately, don't think that it's because you're not dreaming. You just might be eating too much protein or heavy, maybe meat protein that's preventing you from dreaming. If you would eat more fruit, you would have more awareness of what your dreams are in the morning. And of course, when you wake up in the morning, if you don't move, and you lay there and make it your habit to wake up and say, now, what did I just dream? What was that? You will definitely remember more. So very interesting that scientists are, they're still puzzled about why your brain works so hard at night, but many, many people believe that that is when we are moving memory from short-term memory into long-term memory storage. So that might be why people who are having a lot of sleep interruptions or a lot of elderly people who say they're not sleeping well, quite possibly it might be why they're not moving their short-term memory into long-term memory. And their long-term memory, they can remember sometimes what happened to them 20 and 30 and 40 years ago much more clearly than what happened yesterday. So that's another key that we think we know. So number 4 in the countdown is, not all neurons are created equal. While it's true that a lot of activity is happening in our brain, some neurons really take their time to transport information back and forth. And they function at different speeds because of what kind of information is being carried, how fast it's supposed to get to your body and to your brain. Some have reached up to, again, 170 miles per hour, but some move as slowly as half a meter per second, which is extremely slow. Number 3, neurons keep growing. Now, in the past, the old wives' tales of the past, which I think so many people believed, is when you lose your brain cells, you lose your brain cells. That is just not true. Neurons keep growing, and the brain and the brain's activity and the brain enhancement can keep growing and going all throughout our lives, and we can keep reconnecting what's there. And so even though doctors are not sure how to use this understanding of regeneration to treat disease and disorders of the brain completely, it does mean that the fields of neural study are more complex than we formerly thought they were, because we know that there is brain regeneration. Number 2, your brain is 80% water. And just as we need water to keep our entire body going and keep everything working well in our bodies, we truly need to keep our brains watered as well. We need to keep our entire system as full of water as we possibly can. When it reaches a certain point, then of course we know we've reached the max. But as an adult, anytime you feel thirst, you have gone way past the point where you need water, simply because adults after the age of approximately 30 lose their sensation of being thirsty when their body needs water. You need to keep your brain hydrated. And number one, a very interesting thing, your brain itself does not feel pain. The brain processes every sensation except pain. And that is odd in that it has no pain receptors. And there's a lot of tissues and membranes, but still, none of that. The headache that we feel is from other sources and from pressure and from muscles and ligaments, but you could potentially, therefore, damage your brain without being aware of it. And in just that way, I think that if you were aware of what happened to Natasha Richardson, who was skiing this past winter, the gal who is the actress, Vanessa Redgrave's daughter, when she fell when she was skiing, she did not know she had damaged her brain so badly. So let's talk about what we can do to help the brain function better. And there are four cornerstones that are extremely important for all of us when we look at how we can take care of our brain much, much better. The first is food for brain boosting. Now, we heard from someone who had just mentioned that she has to watch what she takes in very carefully, and I think that's extremely important. Some people need more protein than others. Other people can't process protein very well. But one thing that we all need to start with is, that once again, water. As much water as you feel that you can take in, up to about a gallon a day. I am very convinced that people should be drinking close to a gallon a day. But diet does play a critical role in the health of your brain. If you have a healthy diet with portion choice and calories high in protein but reduced in animal protein is what the researchers are saying. How do you get high in protein? You can eat plant protein. Tofu might not be something that you're familiar with eating, but tofu as soybean protein is one of the very best things you can eat for many, many different reasons. But having that kind of protein to give your brain the mix, the right amount of mix of good fats and complex carbohydrates, eating more fruits and vegetables has proven, once again, not just for cancer reduction, but for brain health and brain functioning. Three of the best brain foods you can include in what you're eating are, first, salmon. Second, spinach. And third, blueberries. These are in place for many different reasons. Salmon for the omega-3s and spinach for the incredible antioxidants and high vitamin content of spinach, and blueberries because they have such an antioxidant capability and de-aging capability. But what we also want, if you are taking additional supplements along with this as part of your food, is omega-3 fish oils have proven again and again to help the brain to function better. So omega-3 fish oils, number two in this list of some supplements, and I'm going to give you some others that wake up my brain tremendously. This one I'm going to spell for you. It's called phosphatidylserine. It's phosphatidyl. I'll spell it again. phosphatidyl. And the second word is serine, S-E-R-I-N-E, S-E-R-I-N-E. And the third is a substance that you probably haven't heard too much about, but you can find it in health food stores. It's called huperzine A, H-U-P-E-R-Z-I-N-E. And again, HUPERZINE-A. When your brain doesn't feel like it's functioning the way you want, if you're not remembering things, if your brain isn't working at full capacity, think about what kinds of foods you're taking in. And if you're saying, gosh, I wonder if I'm getting enough vitamins and minerals, I then say to everyone, please, please try juicing just for a period of time to do some juicing of organic carrots and celery and spinach. When you are putting those kinds of things, I also will juice beets and cabbage, but primarily starting with something that is as powerful for your body as carrots are. Carrots will deliver nutrients to your eyes and your skin and all of your organs and your brain, because what it does is it fills your cells with enzymes. And when you have enzymes in your system, you are then able to bring in, able to absorb any vitamins you're taking. And what people, what most Americans are doing is they're not getting enough enzymes, so therefore they're not able to absorb the vitamins they're currently taking. So next, what I want to talk about is stress management, because that's the second cornerstone of brain health. What Dharma Singh Khalsa has found with his research is that when people reduce their stress, their ability to focus and concentrate and gain control of the functioning of their brain increases by about double. That because, number one, because of the cortisol that stress produces, we absolutely have to make sure that we're taking timeouts from stress. And if it's just a commonplace thing for you to have a lot of stress in your life, the key is to say, I, from this point here on out, am going to reduce my stress so that I can think better, so I can focus. Reducing stress is something that we've talked about in other teleseminars, but to remind yourself that there are many, many ways to reduce stress. You can get exercise and reduce your stress. You might be a kind of person who can get in a hot tub and reduce your stress. Some type A's couldn't sit in a hot tub for 2 minutes, and they'd want to be out doing something because their brains are so active. Well, the thing that is very important is to be aware of when you're being stressed. And a lot of people have gotten into such a habit and a pattern of stress that they don't even hear themselves when they get stressed. They don't even recognize it as stress. Just like a lot of people who are very negative will say, well, I'm a positive person. And you will say, if you think this is positive, you ought to be around some other people than the people you're around currently. Because obviously you don't know what that means to be stress-free. When we have chronic stress that doesn't get released as often as it comes up, it raises those cortisol levels in the blood. Here's what cortisol does. It turns the memory center of your brain, and these are in the words of Dr. Khalsa. He says it turns the memory center of your brain into a toxic dump, killing brain cells by the thousands. One of the other things that cortisol, which is the stress hormone, just like adrenaline is the stress hormone, does is cortisol stops glucose from entering your neurons, and they absolutely have to have glucose to function. And therefore, it blocks your neurotransmitter function. And in addition to that, when it stops the neurotransmitter function, we don't make associations. We don't remember words. We don't remember names. And in addition to that, of course, it causes brain cells to become injured and die. So it could be that you say, all right, I'm going to just simply have a heightened level of awareness. Or I'm going to do some other kinds of things that you might have heard about, like Tai Chi, which is the slow motion exercise. When I was in Hong Kong, I saw entire thousands of people at one time doing Tai Chi in parks in Hong Kong. You could also decide that it's an important thing for you to do to get a massage. You could also get either a CD or a tape of guided imagery that can help you release the tension and slow down. But of course, you have to pay attention to what you're hearing on that CD. And sometimes people are so stressed that their focus is jumping all over the place. They can't even listen to that tape or that CD. Or another pathway is yoga. Yoga has succeeded in helping people calm down tremendously when nothing else does. Or learning how to either what's called sit in the silence, where you learn to help your brain to just be at peace, be at rest. And that's what one person on this teleseminar is having trouble with. The other part of that is to learn how what we call meditate, and that's not such a strange word. It just simply means getting some control over your brain and helping it to quit jumping all around. There's probably 1,000 different ways to meditate. And so any of those ways can help reduce your stress, because what has been done in testing is in clinical programs for well over a decade, more like 15 years, these stress management techniques have been found to restore brain power, restore your IQ, strengthen your IQ, make you more brilliant, help you to function better, help you to do things faster and quicker, and to improve memory. And I'm seeing that as two separate functions, although of course it's part of the same brain. But to learn new things, we need brain function. To put those things into action, to remember back to the pieces that we've learned so that it comes naturally and easily before we've even created that pathway of making it a pattern. Managing stress is extremely important. If you have a lot of stress, then it's up to you to decide, what am I going to do to reduce this? Do I need to lay on the floor? Do I need to stretch my spine? Do I need to do some deep, slow breathing? What can I do in the moment? And I know that some of you on this teleseminar were able to hear my quick stress relief seminar, which was not too long ago, where I gave you 10 different ways to quickly reduce stress. Now, this is not life change. I'm standing in a line at the grocery store and I feel like the top of my head is coming off. What can I do to stop my stress and slow it down and get rid of it? Because stress is bad for you. It's bad for everyone you know. And truly, what has been found is that the people who feel that they have early Alzheimer's, where their brains just aren't functioning well anymore, not to mention their memory, it is all about stress. It's all about accrued stress. And so learning to get past this stress is extremely important, learning to get it under control. Now, the third absolute necessity is exercise. And the first kind of exercise is physical exercise. And although that in the past, up until about 5 years ago, the work of Dharma Singh Khalsa had been poo-pooed by the establishment, the medical practitioners who were working on Alzheimer's patients, they were saying, oh, that's ridiculous. Exercise isn't going to do anything. What they have found is that regular exercise can help the brains of active older people to be even sharper than the brains of sedentary young people. In a classic study that was done approximately 10 years ago on exercise and cognition, the mental acuity of a group of 50 to 80-year-old men who played racquetball at least 3 times a week was tested against the mental acuity of a group of sedentary men in their 20s. The older, active men were not only more physically fit than the 20-somethings, but they were also more mentally fit than the younger men. The older men performed better on tests of fluid intelligence. So we know even from history that Thomas Jefferson recommended that we exercise at least 2 hours a day, and that Plato, back in 400 BC, said that a healthy body was necessary for a healthy brain. Exercise, aerobic exercise specifically, where we start huffing and puffing, and we get there through walking briskly, getting more breathing done, doing a lot more pumping of the lungs, it specifically helps the brain three ways. Number one, this is physical exercise. Number one, it supplies the brain with nerve growth factor, which is a compound that we've been able to identify. Nerve growth factor. Number two, it reduces stress when we exercise. And number three, it enhances neuronal, the nerve, metabolism. And let's talk about what that means. First of all, nerve growth factor. I want to tell you a story about a woman who was so far gone with Alzheimer's, she was basically a vegetable. And doctors, in an effort to just try something, anything, to help her and help her husband, started a drip in her brain of nerve growth factor. And in the first couple of weeks, there was nothing that was showing any change at all in her. In the third week, she started having some facial changes in her expression. And in the fourth week, she started speaking for the first time in over a year and a half. And after that, they began to talk with her and work with her, and they were still doing this drip of the nerve growth factor, and she started talking with her husband about their life together, and her husband was so incredibly thankful and relieved. Unfortunately, they needed to close up her brain, and they had to stop the drip. There are people who think that if they had gotten her on some kind of exercise, if they had strengthened her body or kept her body strengthened enough to help her exercise, she could have produced more of her own nerve growth factor, but she didn't, and she regressed again. So that was not a permanent fix. But I just want to tell you what nerve growth factor means is that it enhances all of the cells between the nerves. The glue between the nerves, the glia is what they call it, is what it enhances and helps all the memory pathways flow much more easily. Number two, I don't need to explain to you that exercise reduces stress. That's the other part of what it does. But number three, I do want to tell you what this means. It enhances neuronal metabolism. The most wide-reaching effects of physical exercise on the brain is that it increases the amount of oxygen and glucose the brain gets. It expedites the removal of the dead tissue in the brain. What normally happens every day in and day out, every cell has some tissue that is just gone and dead and it needs to be carried out of there. So it helps take it out and remove that debris from brain cells. It also tones the neurotransmitter systems, increasing the output of neurotransmitters such as norepinephrine and dopamine. And it increases the availability of brain-related enzymes such as CoQ10, coenzyme Q10. When we have this kind of metabolism going on in the brain, we are able to absorb the kinds of supplements that we're giving to the brain that will help it. And it also increases the output of some neuropeptides, including endorphins. Another thing it does is it decreases the low-density lipoprotein, which can clog brain circulation It does one other thing that's really important. It helps decrease the cortisol output by placing a physical governor on the stress response. When you think about all of these kinds of things that it does, as a result of that, it decreases depression, it lowers blood pressure, and it helps stabilize blood sugar levels. So three things. It lowers depression, and that's all about norepinephrine. That's all about serotonin. There's basically three chemicals in the brain that exercise helps. The three chemicals in the brain that are directly responsible for depression, and exercise helps regulate that. So think about that in just basic terms. Exercise, physical exercise, decreases depression, lowers blood pressure, and helps stabilize blood sugar levels. So it also, therefore, stabilizes mood and energy. So it also does one other thing that really, really helps you is just because of the exercise and improving the endocrine function of your body, which is connected to your nerves, it boosts your immunity and it speeds up metabolism. Therefore, you burn more calories, increase the muscle mass, and strengthen bones. So it does so much for you to simply get that physical workout. Physically, it again supplies the brain with the nerve growth factor that it needs to help the messages go through your brain much faster. It, number two, reduces stress, and number three, helps, it enhances the neuronal metabolism. And so when you think about all the things it does in supplying a greater amount of oxygen to your brain, in allowing you to absorb CoQ10, and I'm going to talk more about CoQ10 in just a minute, physical exercise is going to help make you smarter. It's going to stave off any kind of tendency toward Alzheimer's. It's going to stave off depression. It helps regulate blood pressure. It does so much for the brain and therefore for the body and for immunity. The second part of this is very specific brain exercises. We have found that brain exercises such as doing crossword puzzles or doing Sudoku or doing any kind of new learning, like language learning, like learning an instrument, any kind of work with that has helped people decrease their tendencies toward Alzheimer's by 70%. And so when you think, wait a minute, if I can do something to exercise my brain, why wouldn't I do that? And absolutely, we want to do this mental exercise. 70%, I don't know where they're getting this figure, but that is what is in the information from studies they've done over the last 10 years. And I just want to also say that even though Dharma Singh Khalsa's work was considered absolutely far out, weird, strange 10 years ago, it is now officially considered mainstream. And what does that tell you? I have been researching and working with this kind of information for well over 10 years, for almost 18 years now. And I'm so glad to see that finally, the medical community is catching up with the geniuses of the medical community. That's what's really distressing, is that quite possibly your parents were at the hands of doctors who wouldn't allow their minds to think in a newer, fresher way, just as my mother was at the hands of doctors that didn't think in newer, fresher ways. So I'm saying that we poo-pooed exercise as a way to increase IQ in the past, and now they're saying, get exercise, you will get smarter, you will think better. But the memory exercises, if you go online, you will find that there are at least 8 to 10 different companies out there with different kinds of offerings that help your brain to function far, far better. Some have a monthly dues that they have. Others, it's a kit you can buy. There's many different kinds of things. Dharma Singh Khalsa has created something called the Better Memory Kit. And that is available online. If you just put in the Better Memory Kit, Dr. Khalsa, K-H-A-L-S-A, he is truly the, I like reading his book so much because it's fun. He gives you a lot of different kinds of studies that you can actually, you can look up yourself. What I love is, for example, he will tell you that when you're doing activities for the brain, this is when your brain lights up more than at any other time. And getting back to physical exercise just for a minute here, there was a study done of, it says that it has proven that vigorous exercise can make even young, intelligent people even smarter than they already are. A group of cross-country runners were tested for cognitive ability during their off-season and were then tested again at the end of the season, during which they'd run at least 30 miles per week. They tested significantly higher at the end of the season after they had been doing significant activity. And even with a group of monkeys, of course, we all are, we know we experiment on monkeys, but in an experiment with young, healthy monkeys, one group of monkeys was kept sedentary while another group was given a running wheel and another group was given an intricate series of ropes and bridges to play on. Both groups that exercised showed heightened cognitive abilities. They grew more capillaries to their neurons, and these capillaries delivered more oxygen and nutrients to the monkeys' brain cells. The monkeys with the complex play structures grew the largest number of connections in their brains. It absolutely shows that exercise is most valuable when it's combined with thinking. And it also shows that exercise is extremely and particularly effective at improving memory. In one study that compared the memories of a group of elderly people that were put in a walking program with the memories of a group of sedentary elderly people, it proved that over a period of several weeks, the group that exercised showed significant improvement in memory skills while the sedentary group remained the same. So we know that. It's absolutely key. There's something called working memory, and if you think about your computer, you think about RAM memory. RAM memory is that smaller amount of memory. Then there's the what's called long-term, well, storage space in your computer is like long-term memory. But RAM memory, what do you have available to you? How many items on your shopping list can you remember? How many do you forget every time you walk out the store? But you can work with your brain in so many ways, and you can make it work. You can exercise it. If I were to say to you, name the presidents of the United States back to Herbert Hoover, or name the presidents back to as far as you possibly can, and then you take the names of those presidents and you say, okay, now I'm going to name all the presidents, first the Democrats, and then I'll name the presidents that were Republican. And you start thinking, okay, all right, suddenly I'm doing something more with my brain. That's called working memory. Can we do that? Could you actually say, I want you to name for me all 50 states? Well, that's going to get your brain going. And then I want you to say, okay, now I'm going to start naming the states alphabetically. What is responsible for the work that's going on in that moment is what is called your working memory. And what has come of all of these tests on both working out your brain through brain exercises and doing things like specifically working with Scrabble or crossword puzzles or Sudoku, what specifically has come out of this is that the working memory, the ability to hold more facts in your brain at a time instead of just five little numbers, how many facts can you hold in your brain at a time? How much of a workout can you give it? Can you tell I'm really excited about this stuff? I really am. Because I started working with myself and saying, okay, come on, let's do the states. Let's start all the states. I'm driving down the road and starting to think, Alaska, Alabama, wait a minute, Alabama first, then Alaska. And, you know, you start working with your brain and you realize, hey, I could be working my brain out a lot better than I am. What about listing all the capitals of all the states? you know, if you've got children or grandchildren to play with, it's a fun game to do with them. But it also works out your memory. Don't get lazy. Don't ask somebody else to fill in the blank for you. When you can't remember a word or can't remember a name, make your brain work. Now, here is something. Let's go to number 4, supplements for clearer thinking and avoidance of Alzheimer's. I want to tell you that when I'm out there, and I've been doing seminars around the world for almost 20 years. This is, I hate to say this because I never talk about my age or talk about age period, but I do want to say that there have been times when I have been really, really working hard on the road where I'm in another country and I'm in a foreign place and I have to be speaking have to check the ballroom at 7 o'clock in the morning. I have to start speaking at 8 o'clock. I speak for 7 straight hours except for lunch, during which time I pack and check out and maybe get to finish eating my breakfast. And then I catch another plane that night or I catch a train and I get to another city and I speak the next morning and do the same thing again. And when you do that 3 weeks in a row, speaking 4 or 5 days in the week, maybe you're in a foreign country, you have to find your way around. Nobody's providing cushy transportation or directions for you. You're doing it yourself. You can get quite tired. But what I found when I was doing that is that I was amazed when I would start forgetting a name of something. That really bothered me because during the course of a 7-hour seminar, I absolutely had to remember and speak on about 20 different books, which meant 20 different authors. And typically, I was able to do an entire 7-hour seminar remembering at least 20 books and 20 authors' names and sometimes dates and everything else. I would give a 7-hour seminar without ever referring to my notes. Well, when I would have a moment where I could not remember a name or a name of a book, that really freaked me out. I really got scared. And what I discovered helped me more than anything else is ginkgo biloba. Ginkgo biloba, BILBOA. Very, very important. And the way I take it is as a tincture. You can get it in capsules, but I take it as a tincture. And that's what I really think is the way to do it. So when you think about taking this as something that can help you, what I do is I put it in a tiny bit of distilled water, and I drink it. And if I feel that my memory has not been really good lately, I'll do it 3 times a day. It takes 2 to 3 days. And at the end of that time, I can remember anything and everything. So ginkgo biloba, for me and for Dharma Singh Khalsa, he says, recent dynamic research was published in the prestigious Journal of the American Medical Association in a year-long multi-centered placebo-controlled study of more than 300 patients with either Alzheimer's or multifaceted dementia, ginkgo helped. In fact, it helped as much as the drugs used by many neurologists without the risk and at a much, much, much lower cost when you consider what pharmaceuticals cost. So some of the other things that I have used and do use now as well is CoQ10, coenzyme Q-10, and it's just commonly referred to as CoQ10. Studies have shown this to be a major neuroprotective compound. And in Brain Longevity, and that's why I want to refer you to this book, it will tell you how much the ideal dose is of CoQ10. I would rather have you find that yourself than prescribe it because every body is different. And I would much rather have you experiment with saying, let's see what this much does and see if I can feel something here. Coenzyme Q10 has also been used for heart function. And many studies have shown that it helps your heart also absorb more oxygen, just in the way that it helps your brain absorb more oxygen, and that is also what ginkgo biloba does. There is another, one more I want to recommend to you. It's called choline, C-H-O-L-I-N-E, choline, C-H-O-L-I-N-E, and that is a B vitamin. Choline, depends on the person, can also help with memory and brain functions. And in the recommendations that many neurologists now are giving is that B vitamins, of course, are very helpful for the brain because B vitamins are known to be those vitamins that help your nerves. The complete family of B vitamins help your brain cells create energy, and especially B12 and folic acid, which work to lower and control levels of the heart-harmful amino acid homocysteine. So I also want to refer you to taking a look at Brain Longevity. It's probably in every library. Also, one other thing I want to tell you to write down is vitamin E. And do not take vitamin E in the gel capsules with the oil, because by the time you buy it on a shelf, it is already rancid. Make sure you get vitamin E in its powdered form in a capsule. Vitamin E, a daily dose of 2,000 IUs. Now, usually it comes in the form of 400 IUs in a capsule. But here's what it has been found to do. A daily dose, now this may not be for you, but you may know someone who is afraid of getting Alzheimer's or maybe has the beginning form of it. A daily dose of 2,000 IUs of vitamin E has been found to slow the progression of Alzheimer's disease. According to Professor Marguerite Kay of the University of Arizona Health Sciences Center, the dose of vitamin E needed for neuroprotection is only 800 IUs. Even 400 IUs can really help you. But it's especially when it's incorporated with a full-spectrum brain longevity program. Now, let me tell you one other thing about the book Brain Longevity. It gives exercises in the book for different kinds of breathing techniques and yoga techniques that can help your brain function better. And I used one breathing technique that absolutely blew me away. And it's a breathing technique whereby you breathe in and out of your nostrils rapidly. It's as if you are getting oxygen going up through your nasal passages directly to your brain, and you're getting a new dose of oxygen each time you do it, and you do it in a rapid beat for about 10 breaths and then stop and wait, and then do it again and stop and wait. It has helped me truly wake up my brain when, let's say, I've been traveling all day and I come into a city and I'm very tired and I have to speak at 7 o'clock in the evening. I will do that and it'll wake up my brain tremendously. I heartily recommend the books of these two doctors. I think they are phenomenal, especially Brain Longevity because it's fun to read, and Richard Restack's books are also wonderful. But let us take a moment now. We've gone a little bit over. If you would unmute by pressing *6, and any repetition you'd like, any questions or comments you might have, I'm open. Any thoughts that anybody has? Can't hear anyone. Can't hear a darn thing.
This is Sandy. I came on like 20 minutes ago because I was busy playing. I was dancing to Josh Groban and Lost Track of Time.
Well, and there you go, Brain Longevity. That can really help for that. So you'll have to go back and listen to this one later because it really is packed full of information. But anything in particular, I may have covered it, but I'll tell you if I have. Any thoughts or any kind of... anything that applies to something that you wanted to know when you came on today?
Mm-hmm.
Nope. Well, I'll tell you something, just so that everybody knows, most really good health food stores carry all of these things I talked about. And when I say a really good health food store, I'm not referring to GNC, although some GNCs, which are privately run, have some very good people running them that are very aware of what we need, and they will get some additional offerings that are just great. But if you go to some major health food providers, and I can think of a few, like Whole Foods, and generally you'll find that in a small health food store, in a health food store that is really dedicated to health, you will find all of these things that I've mentioned. In their tincture department, you will find ginkgo biloba, you will find all of the different vitamins. So anything that anyone would like repeated, or anything, any question or thought you have? Well, okay then. We will wrap it up, but I just want to tell you that when I started walking 3 miles a day after having been working really hard in more sedentary kinds of things, I really, truly saw my brain increase its capacity. And because of that, I got involved in another new venture that was absolutely wonderful for me. But I am totally convinced that had I not started walking 3 miles a day when I did, I may have gone into a slump and thought that, gee, I don't know what's happening to me. Maybe it's this accumulated stress from all of these years of traveling and pushing myself so constantly. But I was able to recover my brain, and I truly feel that I made a comeback. So if you've ever been in that situation where you're feeling that you're just kind of slipping away and you don't know what to do about that, that's when you need to get out there and start the exercise. And if you're physically tired at night, you're going to sleep a lot better. But it's the whole issue of meditation, or the issue of saying, I can learn how to focus my mind on a specific point, or I can learn to focus my mind on a brown paper bag, which is the way I learned how to keep my mind quiet at night. I imagined I was looking at the side of a big shopping bag, a really ugly brown paper bag. It didn't even have anything written on the side. And I made myself focus on that brown paper bag to quiet my mind down. And amazingly enough, it helped. And that's another thing that people do, of course, is they count sheep. They imagine sheep going past or jumping over a fence. And pretty soon, the cognitive side of your brain gets really bored with that, and that's what makes some people go to sleep. But then some of you might say, that just makes me wake up more. I start looking at the sheep and thinking about how you do sheep shearing, and then I start thinking about why they're all so different, and say, okay, don't count sheep then. Focus on the side of a brown paper bag. So I want to thank you all for joining me today, and I hope that you will go to the website this evening. That will be posted so that you can see the top 10 really interesting facts about the brain posted as well. And over the next week, you're going to see more information about the brain, so that if you missed some of the things I was saying here, you can hear this again, of course, by dialing back in to the number that you have. Or if you don't have that, I will send that to you right away so you can dial back in and hear it again. You also can get additional information on the website at successstar.org. And you go to the brain boosting button. Thank you all. I will talk with you in 2 weeks. Bye-bye.